afternoon, St. Louis DJS on KMOX. Happy Wednesday to you. So we have the best 30-minute show you've ever heard in your life. Coming up, and then we're going to hand it over to the pregame boys and then Cardinal Baseball at 2:37, right?
Yeah, the game's 2:37.
Why so specific?
I don't know.
Is that an Oakland thing?
It is, yeah. I don't know why they've chosen that, but they have chosen that. Makes no sense, does it? Just pick a round number. We like fives
nothing,
and zeros,
nothing
man.
Nothing in Oakland makes sense right now.
No, they're ridiculous.
That's crazy. Yeah, which hurts me because when I was a kid, I was a big Cardinals fan, but I was also a big A's fan.
Oh, man. You're talking about the 70s
Raleigh
teams?
Raleigh Singers,
oh, yeah.
Blue,
yeah,
Gene Tennis.
Yeah. Love those guys. Joe Rudy.
Love the uniform.
Reggie Jackson.
And now they're moving to Vegas by way of
Sacramento.
Hartford, Illinois.
Yeah.
Like, what are they doing?
They're going to be playing in a AAA ballpark for the next three seasons.
Okay.
At least, because the deal in Vegas is not finalized. They do not have an agreement on a stadium. They do not have financing for the stadium. They do not have anything that is actually underway. So it's at least 3 years in Sacramento.
Very odd.
So yeah, we're going to have a major league team playing in a minor league ballpark for 3 years.
So let's keep the sports thing going. Jontay Porter, who has local ties and was a Mizzou kid and then in the NBA. And a few weeks ago, it was came to light that I guess FanDuel or DraftKings or somebody said, this guy is hinky. He's pulling shenanigans. Take it from there.
Yeah, so what happens, this is one of the benefits of this stuff being legal and upfront, right, is that more people are placing their bets with places that are monitoring for weird behaviors, monitoring for strange patterns. That's what Vegas does. Like, if you go, the sports books at Vegas follow this stuff better than anybody because they get hurt if games are being rigged, right? Because there's a chance they could lose big on that. What Vegas wants is the same number of bets on each side of every game because they automatically win. There is no loss. They get the juice. They get their percentage no matter what. And FanDuel and DraftKings and the other online game, you know, the other online book, you know, sports books, whatever you want to call them, gambling sites, they have the same incentive. They want the equal number of equal amount of action on each side of a bet. That's why betting lines are what they are. It's a line that's trying to get the same number of bets on each side, so you never lose big and you always win when you're the house. Mm-hmm. So they noticed strange betting patterns related to Jontay Porter. They noticed that there were a lot of bets that way more money than would come in for a guy that's just a back of the bench kind of guy, right? He's a nobody. He's the 12th guy, the 10th guy on the team playing 10, 12 minutes a game. He's not in any way an impact player, but they noticed there was a strange amount of action, both in terms of bets and dollars on his unders. So they put up, you know, over-unders on point totals, rebounds, assists, things like that. And every time there was that amount of action, the under hit. And the action was all on the under. And then when they started looking back at it and like, okay, this game, Jontay Porter's point total was 6.8 over-under. And we had all this action on the under. And 3 minutes into the game, he leaves with an, quote, eye injury and doesn't come back. And then the next game, he's fine and he's playing. So they noticed a lot of weird patterns like that, and they turned it over to the NBA. The NBA did their investigation. They found that this happened. They also found that he bet against his own team. He bet on the Raptors to lose. He plays for the Toronto Raptors, played for the Toronto Raptors. So he was betting them to lose. You can't bet on your own sport. The end, over, under, win or lose. That's going to be lifetime ban. So now he's got the lifetime banishment from the NBA.
He's got the Pete Rose.
Yeah. I mean, and
only he's worse than Pete Rose.
He bet against his own team.
He's actually manipulating the game.
Right. And then part of the NBA's statement was that he was also disseminating the information to other bettors. He was telling them, bet the under on me tonight or whatever. And then they were all making bets. And it turns out, like, I guess he made $1 million doing this over a period of time. But who knows what else that meant? Was he paying off a debt to another person by saying, hey, I don't have the money to give you this, but if you make this bet, I guarantee you'll win. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know the extent of how it all went. Maybe what we know is all of it, but the fear that the NBA has and every sports league has is that it's compromising the outcome of games. Now, he's not a big enough player to throw a game. He doesn't impact the game enough to do that. It would be too big of a risk for him or for a bettor to be like, go throw the game, Jonte. He's not a big star. Yeah. He's not like his brother Michael, who is a star. But yeah, he is now banned from the NBA for life. And I just, how stupid can you be?
Yeah.
You know that, it's funny. We don't joke about those people that like they murder their spouse and they're Googling how do you get rid of a body. And this is that stupid. You're making bets and you're giving out information about yourself that is being tracked.
It would be even more illegal, but he would have been better served going to a bookie.
If he was doing all of this the illegal way, like going to, you know, just an illegal bookmaker like the guy with the Dodgers,
Ohtani.
like Ohtani's translator, Mitsuhara, if he were doing that, it's a lot harder to catch because then the companies don't have the data to look back and say, wow, that's a weird amount of action on Jonte Porter. Because on a typical day, we get 5 bets on Jonte, and today we've got 5,000. What's going on, right? Like, that's just a made-up example, but, like, that's what they do. And when they see strange patterns, they have algorithms that are looking for these patterns. Mm-hmm. They report that to the leagues, and then the leagues do their investigations.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let's talk some Cardinals, since there's a game today. Anything special about the game today?
Well, got a chance to go for a sweep. I mean, like, look, the A's have gotten off to a decent start by their standards, right? They came into this series at 7-9, which was the same record the Cardinals had. But they're basically a Triple A team. Like they're going to be one of the 2 or 3 worst teams in the league at the end of the year. So get them, right? Like this is your chance to sweep against a really bad team. Take the win. It's not the end of the world if you lose. You've already won the series. You won the first 2 games. But you are going up against a pitcher for them that has made 2 or 3 starts, and he hasn't given up a run yet this season. So he's been pitching really well. But these opportunities are not common, right? When you're going up against a really bad team, you got a chance to pull off the clean sweep. This is how you get yourself ahead. You beat these terrible teams. It's kind of like the number one thing. And then the other thing that's it's still interesting is we're still trying to figure out how they're going to continue to handle Victor Scott II as they go forward. Like, he's not in the lineup again today. They're playing Michael Ciani, who's just a backup guy, but he's going to play center field. And they're facing a decision here really soon. And I don't know how much longer they can keep him if he's just going to be essentially a zero at the plate, right? I mean, he's hitting 089. He's not walking. He's not doing anything on the bases because he's not on base. And it's really not fair to him to leave him in this position. It's going to be better for his development to go back to the minor leagues at some point. Even though you hate it, even though you want to see him and we want all that excitement of the great speed, none of the speed helps you if you can't get on base.
Can you tell, and by you, I mean more the royal you than Kevin Wheeler, but can you tell by watching Victor Scott, oh, it's because he's behind on the 100-mile pitches, or oh, it's because he's fishing for this or XYZ?
You can, like, just as an example, what I see a lot is he's getting pitches in the strike zone and he's not doing anything with it, which is the first sign that there's a problem. Like, it's one thing if a guy's a little excited and he's chasing pitches out of the zone, you can kind of be like, you can correct that. Hey, we got to be more selective. We got to do this. But when you look at, like, as an example, when you're having success, you can hit a fastball. And he's hitting .140 against the fastball. So he's getting fastballs in the strike zone, and he's not hitting them. And he's getting fastballs more than half the time. So he's getting 53% of his pitches he's facing are fastballs. And the majority of them are in the strike zone. Teams are challenging him.
Yeah, kind of chum in the water for the pitchers.
And he still has no hits against anything off speed.
Woo.
He's 5-for-35 against the fastball. He is 0-for-21 on anything off speed.
I hope that's fixable.
Oh, it is.
In
the
minor leagues.
Yes. I mean, look, he's made a pretty big jump. He didn't play at AAA. He was at AA last year, went to the Arizona Fall League, went to spring training. He just needs more at-bats against advanced pitching because every level you go up, the pitchers are better at their off-speed pitches. They're better with their command. And what he's facing now is something he's never seen before. So, yeah, I don't have any long-term worries based on what I've seen this year. I just see a guy that's not ready yet.
Yeah, good. Race, what's the What a Baby thing?
There was an art installation that was just for women, and I guess you go in and you have like fun snacks, and it's just like a female-oriented art exhibit, and a man got upset and sued, and so now he's allowed into the art exhibit as well.
I remember when I first started my show, so it's been a long time ago, back before things like this happened on a hourly basis, but Wheeler, you may remember this, the guy who sued over Ladies Night.
Made himself, at the Alamo Draft House?
No. This is a long time ago. In general, there was, you know, like, Ladies Night should not happen, where ladies drink free or they get, you know, $1 well drinks or something.
It's discrimination.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, Ladies Night back in the day was to attract men to come out because all the ladies are there and they're drinking for free. And all the men are like, shut up. What are you doing?
Yeah,
that they use the discrimination, a tribunal. So this all happened in Australia, and they had like a tribunal come together and like, okay, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to let this guy in? Or are we going to keep him out? They did determine it was discriminatory, so he was allowed into the exhibit. But part of the point of the exhibit was to give men a taste of the discrimination that these artists say that many women have experienced throughout history. I mean, there's always been like men-only golf clubs and all sorts of things. I get like having your feelings are like, oh, I can't believe I don't get to go into the art exhibit, but to actually sue and turning it into a thing, like, I do think you're a giant baby at that point. I'm sorry.
I don't know even how this is possible, but does anyone wish there could be like men's clubs and ladies clubs, or is that just...
I don't have any interest in anything like that.
For example, if there was a ladies club, I wouldn't be offended.
No, I don't care. I don't care if there are men's ones either. Just not appealing.
Yeah, I mean, I think as long as you're not hurting anyone, I don't think there... I mean, you should be able to have any kind of club you'd like.
Right.
What about a bigger institution, though? What about, like, Augusta National, where they hold the Masters? Because for a long time, they had a male-only membership, and it became a really big deal. I mean, they got in a lot of trouble for it, and eventually they opened it up. Does it matter the size of the institution, the magnitude of the institution? Or is it simple, hey, you know what? It's your club. It's a private club. You can do what you want.
Legally, possibly, morally, nah. To me, it's just more that I wonder more on a sociological level whether men and women crave that.
Well, don't you also think that there is a difference between a male-only space and then a female-only space? Because historically, women have been kept out of so many spaces. Like, don't you think we do deserve to have a couple of things for ourselves after all this time?
Like as payback?
Not as payback, but just as like... payback's the wrong way to put it, but since we have been kept out of so many different organizations, then it's like, all right, we're going to make our own. And then, of course, men have to come in and be like, but I would like to be a part of it. It's like you only want to be a part of it because it's female only.
Yeah, but that's a very specific self-policing number of men who do that kind of stuff.
Right. It's not normal.
Yeah. I think most men would be like me, who would say, good for you. Do whatever you want to do. It's fine.
What if we divide it up by skin color instead of sex? Does that change the vibe?
It's a really weird thing.
It changes the feel of it, doesn't it?
I'm shocked at Wheeler's suggestion there.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I get what you're saying, and I kind of feel similarly. Like, I think there is a difference between, like, hey, we're going to have a minority-only club. Let's say it's a college campus, and, like, this is a club for minorities only. Then if you have the whites-only club, it's like, whoa, that's kind of weird, because historically there have been so many whites-only spaces.
We had that when I was at WashU Law, which my first year was 87, 88, something like that, and they had gay law, that's what it was called,
okay.
And they had the Black Law Students League or union, and of course, someone filed for the White Students Union, which I doubt would happen in 2024, but 1987, I guess they're...
Yeah, it isn't, I mean, it's a fascinating conversation, right, because a lot of those things don't sound weird until you make it a majority squeezing out smaller populations.
Yeah.
That's what ends up causing the vibes. Now, women are not the minority in the country as far as numbers, but they have always been forced back, held back when it comes to careers, jobs. And it's gotten, obviously, it's changed, dramatically in the last 70 years. But, I mean, it's been very gradual. I mean, like, how long ago was it that women couldn't have credit cards in their own name? That was the
70s. It was like the 70s.
Yeah. So, like, historically, while the numbers were never a, quote, minority number, they were treated that way in the workplace and in a lot of ways. So
you think about it, this time we're living in now really is unique because in another 40 years, none of the people who experienced what it was like when black people couldn't marry white people, when women couldn't get their own credit cards without their husband's permission, they'll all be dead. They'll all be gone. And no one will remember that time, not specifically living through it.
Yeah.
But now we do. I remember it.
Yeah.
And my mom, who's 97, remembers way worse stuff. So it's an interesting time that it's been changed, and yet there are still people alive who very well remember it, and a lot of people who don't like it. That's a lot of the fights we're having now.
Right.
Well, and even if we get to a point where it's like, oh, everyone who lived through that time is now gone, the after effects of that time are still going to live out.
Yes.
So.
Going to go to Cardinal Baseball after this. So Heinz 57 has made a product so horrific it's going to bring about the tribulation period. Have you heard of Barbie sauce? Barbecue sauce?
I saw this on Twitter earlier today.
It's made with vegan mayo, barbecue sauce, and it's bright pink based on a beet product.
I just don't like the bright pink aspect. It would just throw me off.
What does a beet product mean?
I don't know. Something made from beets?
Oh, beets, like the food. I was thinking like
drums. They're dropping rhymes?
Yeah.
Barbecue.
Somebody give me a beet.
This is the rapping Barbie.
It's the Run DMC sauce.
We can only make this when we're rapping.
I mean, I guess it's cute that they're putting this out, but why didn't they do it like last summer when Barbie was in theaters?
Or make it less gross.
Yeah.
Or not tell us what's in it.
Is the vegan
Mystery
mayo throwing
sauce.
You off?
There you go.
Well, just mayo and barbecue sauce is kind of throwing me off.
Yeah. And beets.
And the beets were like the kicker.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and we put a drop of Pepto-Bismol in, so.
How about some of that pink penicillin? Can we put
Barbie
that in there?
Barbie loves it.